Blog Talk Radio. Hi, this is Marnie Svedberg, and I welcome you to Marnie and Friends, a place where leaders share practical, helpful, and encouraging ways to get anything important done faster, better, and smarter. Right now, I encourage you to sit back, buckle up, and join us for fun, laughter, practical help, and clear thinking, the kind of discussion that focuses our attention off of the fluff and onto the most important stuff in life. Again, welcome to Marnie's Friends. Let's get going. Hi, everybody. It's Marnie, and I'm excited to be back here with you. Hope that you're having a great day, and I am sure having fun being home. Been on the road for on and off for weeks on end, and excited to have my feet down on the ground for a little while here, a couple weeks back-to-back, so excited about that. Also, we have a great show for you today. We have a branding and marketing expert with us, Lillian Brummett. She's an award-winning author, a radio talk show host, and a blogger. Plus, she's a co-owner with her husband of the Brummett Media Group, and they offer book publishing services from formatting to cover design, graphic design, and promotional material creation, plus books and CDs. And she is here to share with us some key strategies for really positioning yourself and promoting yourself and whatever it is that you're trying to get out there, whether it's a product, a service, an event, or even a ministry. And she's here to join us with some great tips. So welcome to you, Lillian.
Thanks for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you, and I'm excited to hear what you're going to share today. Our audience is made up of a wide array of people who are busy promoting different things, from books to events to women's ministries to their own online resources, everything from restaurants and retail stores to all kinds of different things. And we're going to kind of be talking about branding and marketing for 2013 as how it can affect, you know, anybody, but especially people who are writing books or online like that, and then we'll apply it to brick and mortars as well from there. Maybe, Lillian, give everybody a little bit of background how you guys started Brummett, and the website is Brummett, B-R-U-M-E. I can't get it right. Brummett.ca, Brummett.ca, and that's because it's in Canada. So tell us how you guys started your Brummett Media Group.
I laugh because I, too, end up getting those tongue twister moments. So I'm with you there, Marty. Well, you know, the website Brummett.ca, Brummett.ca, is the main page for the Brummett Media Group, and it's been revised as of summer of 2012. We started all new. We started a new name with new services, new editions of our books and all of that, a whole new launch, new location because we moved to another community. So everything started all over again, but yes, it's called Brummett Media Group now is the actual name of the company, and the website, of course, is Brummett.ca. So, you know, way back in the day, in my 20s, my early 20s, I started my own business. I did this because I wanted to get away from the rat race. I was tired of working for someone else and doing a lot of overtime, doing a lot of extras for those people that I was working for, and not feeling like I was getting ahead in life, and not feeling like the loyalty was reciprocated. What happened at that moment in time is I had been involved in an accident, and when I was ready to go back, a fairly minor accident, I was riding my bike and somebody knocked me over from their car. And, you know, I was laid up for about 6 or 8 months and in rehab for a little while, and then I was back to work. But when I went to go back to work, my job was gone, and I felt I had a lot of anger because I felt like I had given them my life and that wasn't reciprocated back to me. So I decided, you know what, I want to try working for myself. I knew I had a lot of, you know, self-discipline, a lot of gumption. I was willing to do the research and the work. Went and took a couple business courses, went down to the local small business support groups where they help you out with designing your business plan and things like that. And, you know, initially they told me your business that you're trying to work on, there's actually too many competitors. We feel that you're just not going to be able to fit into the market. And, of course, whenever I'm told no, I have to go, you know, the opposite way. So I went forward anyway, despite their advice. Mm-hmm. And what I did was I phoned all of my competitors and I said, you know, what are you doing? What kind of services do you provide? What products do you use? All of that kind of thing. I interviewed some people, had discussions with people who had hired similar services and asked them what they liked or didn't like about what they saw. And I incorporated that information in my business model so that I would stand out among everybody else. So what I did, because at this point I had been unemployed for quite a while, and so I was working with less than a shoestring budget. So what I did to start everything off after investing in all the equipment and uniforms and what have you, I went out and I hand-delivered flyers to my clientele. This is called direct marketing. So I did this physically. I walked up and down the neighborhoods with curled up flyers that were tied together kind of like a dogma with this beautiful ribbon, and I put that in either their door handle itself or in the slot for their mail. And within a year, I was turning away customers. That's all I spent on advertising. So I did that for about 2.5 weeks, started working. From there, became a referral thing happening there from clients who really liked what I was doing, telling their neighbors, their friends, what have you. And as I say, within a year, I was turning away clients. And I did that business for about 6 years, hiring people to help me out for different contract jobs that I was doing or to take on extra heavy schedules when that happened. But mainly, I tried to be a single proprietor, a sole proprietor. And towards the end, I realized that I was getting so busy and so tired by having to do the business end of things and doing the services itself that I was looking at hiring full-time staff. Right at that time, I got involved in another accident. This time I was rushing home between one job to another to have my lunch, and I got in this three-pile sort of a pileup, and that put me out of commission completely. I was in physiotherapy full-time for a year, and then realized as I came out of physiotherapy that I wasn't going to be able to do the work, you know, the physical work that I was doing before. And, you know, even just sitting for long periods, that bothered me, standing for long periods. Anything, you know, was very difficult for me. So as I was going through the healing process, I dropped down into chronic depression, literally chronic depression, and started having old, very negative, I don't want to live type thoughts that I had when I was very young. And I thought that was never going to happen again. So I was feeling very crushed at this point in my life. And I ended up vocalizing this to my husband. I had learned how to communicate and was communicating this to him. And he said to me, okay, well, we're going to fix this. What do we have to do? What do you need to do to make this work for you? And I was so lost. I had no idea. So I started taking courses in regards to finding yourself, you know, taking those career tests to find out who I am and what my likes and dislikes are and all of this. And, you know, writing just kept on popping up. It just kept on popping up in the answers. This is, one of the career choices for you. And after several times of that being put into my brain, it finally clicked that, you know what, writing has always been a huge part of my life, all through my childhood trauma, healing from the abuse and issues that I had gone through as a young person. I'd always turned to writing. Writing always affected my teachers, brought them to tears. I won contests, you know, all of those kinds of things. Those memories started coming up, and I started realizing, you know what, maybe there's something in this. And so that started my writing career. I took some writing courses in regards to how to be a writer professionally. Not how to write, but how to be a professional writer. So I learned, you know, how to do the bookkeeping, taxes that I was going to have to be aware of, how to do the organization, how to do the queries, how to deal with media, what the media is all about, that kind of thing. And I started out as a freelance writer. Moved into, once my sort of resume of sorts built up, I was able to get some staff jobs at local newspapers and newsletters and a few magazines and freelancing on the side. And through that, I developed a column called Trash Talk. Now, that column after many years of being published internationally, ended up being developed into the very first book that I wrote. So today I have 5 books that are published. Many of them are in new editions, new revisions. I have my blog, I have my radio show, and of course the other services that my husband and I offer together. Over the years we evolved into partnering in the business and learning who was good at what, and and sort of divvying up the different chores involved in running a business, and we developed a perfect partnership between the two of us. So that's where we are today with the Bremmett Media Group.
Awesome. Now I'm going to back up for those who aren't familiar with you, because I gave no information about this side of your life. Describe to them in 30 seconds or less what Trash Talk is, because it could be taken two ways.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Actually, I learned of that much later on, that there was another term for meaning to that term. To me, it meant about talking about trash, meaning your garbage, your waste. Your waste streams, your water conservation, alternative power, recycling, reusing, refusing, reducing, repurpose, all of those R's that are involved in zero waste, including conservation and rot, which is composting. So that's what that was all about. That column sort of evolved into a book, which is now a 2-part series focusing on reducing one's waste and lightening one's footprint and saving a heck of a lot of money at the same time.
Right, right. That's so great. And that book is still available, right? Trash Talk?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
That's right.
So you can check that out. And everything's available. You can check everything out over at Bremmett.ca, Bremmett.ca. Let's go ahead and get going, Lillian, with the training. And you guys, if you haven't already downloaded the notes, you can do that over at Marnie's Friends or LeadershipAttitudes.com. We're going to talk about marketing and branding today. And first I wanted to just have us kind of build a foundation here so we all know what we're talking about as we go forward. There's a difference between branding and marketing and platform. And you've touched on it kind of in your own story. You had to really develop each of these things from scratch for your first business. And then again, with your next business, you had to start. And actually the next business became, from my perspective, multiple faceted business. You were a writer as well as, you know, article writer, as well as a published author, as well as a, you know, media, you're actually doing media promotion at this point for other people as well. So let's go ahead and talk about branding first, and maybe give a definition for branding and then maybe an example of that.
Okay. One of the things that can be really confusing for people is all the new terms that are out there in the industry and when it comes to marketing or business management. And if today I talk about books, I just wanted to mention to your audience that you could really insert your own word in there, whatever your product or your service or your business is, in instead of books, because really all of the information that I'm sharing here or in our Purple Smells Like Marketing book is a business plan. It's a marketing plan, no matter what your product or service is. It just so happens that my personal focus is books. So just to sort of clarify there. So branding, this is a term that's used to describe how you present yourself, or a better way of saying this is how you appear to others. What you're known by is another way of saying it. So this is what branding means. I guess an example of this would be a woman, Jane, and she's built a reputation on living, of being a green living expert. And her specialty, though, within that genre, is educating her audience on, let's say, composting. So that is her brand. This also means that her logo, the colors that she's using in her promotion materials, the website, everything that she puts out there has to reflect this brand, what she is going to be known by. So that's what a brand is.
I love that. And a couple ways that I like to think about branding is like the cattle. I mean, that's where the word came from, is when you brand a cow or one of your other animals in a farmyard, you're actually putting searing into the skin something that can't be removed. It becomes part of the animal so that the animal can be easily identified. And that's what branding really is. It's kind of a crude a crude illustration, but that's where the word came from, and that's really how seriously you want to take it, so that when someone thinks of your business or you or your products and services or your women's ministry or event or whatever it is, that they can't distinguish that from what you do, that it's so the same there. It's one and the same. And then the other way I like to think about branding, too, is like a beaten path. So if you think about a baseball field, like a baseball diamond, and how the path from home to first base and from first to second and from second to third and from third to fourth, how different those look from the rest of the field. The rest of the field is green and, you know, all kind of, you know, uniform. But that particular path is a beaten path, and it's very clearly defined where you're supposed to go and what you're supposed to do and what the goal is there. You run around that, and then you can get a home run. Well, that's how your branding should be. It should be so clearly defined, so integral, so connected and all as a unit that you can't hardly distinguish it from each other. So that's the branding part of it. And I think, Lillian, before we go on to marketing, one of the things that you brought up in your story is so incredibly important, that before you start branding marketing, you really have to understand who you are, what you're doing. And it's very important for you to do the pre-work before you get to the positions of branding and marketing. So let's just go back and talk about some of the pre-work for just a minute. One of the things that you mentioned that definitely is what everybody has to do in one way or another is discover what you're good at or what you want to do. And for you, that was a journey that took you through, you know, a couple different businesses on the way to where you were going. And I think all of us will have a similar experience of that. Very few people just launch right out and are doing their life work from, you know, the time they're 18. But at the same time, this journey of discovery of who we are and what we want to do is so important. So maybe I call it mission vision work. What do you call it, that pre-work that people do?
That would be your business research, your business plan, I guess, would be what you're talking about there. You know, who you are and what you're going to focus on, and your unique situation at that moment in time and how you're going to work with that in a positive way. That would be your basic business plan formation. So even if you're struggling to find yourself and your niche prior to, embarking on the business, you're still in the business plan construction, because you're doing the research. You're discovering who you are and where your talents are and what you may need to improve on, courses that you may need to take in order to put it all together. It's kind of like having all of these loose puzzles that you dump out of a box, and you have to sort of piece it all together. And once it's pieced together, it seems like your work is done because you're ready to launch your business, but actually that's when the real work begins. So putting those pieces together is really just, I think, the research and the business plan aspect.
Yeah, and if you were to think of that puzzle illustration again, the business plan is going to be like your outside parameters, and then you're going to kind of build it from there. You're going to build it on the inside from there, but you're going to say, this is kind of what I'm going to do. This is where I'm going to go. And then from there, you work on your branding, your logo development, the way that you're going to communicate to the public what it is that you do exactly. That will include what you don't do. So, for example, we have a Mexican restaurant. Well, we don't do steak and potatoes. You know, we're Mexican. So when you're branding, you are able to identify in that moment what you are going to do for people instead of the whole big world, and it helps them to identify with you in that way. Okay, so the next one is marketing. Why don't you define for us marketing?
Okay, marketing has actually several sub-genres. I'm not sure how long you want me to take with this, Marnie, but marketing is basically using a variety of techniques to get your brand out there. So you would start with your platform, and your platform is kind of like a launching pad that supports your marketing and promotion efforts. So you need to start there, but you're always building and changing and evolving the platform. So don't worry about that if you have to go back and tweak things. That's normal. So this would include things like promotion materials that you've prepared, a website that describes your services or products, your blog, setting up your social media, doing a newsletter, an e-newsletter if that's the route that you want to go, or an email campaign. radio show, video series, whatever you're choosing to utilize, that is where you're going to be launching from. Once you've decided what your platform is going to be, and it's going to be unique to you, you and your unique situation, your unique service or product, you want to keep that in mind. You don't want to do what everybody else is doing. You want to do something that's very unique and special for you. And even though a lot of people out there have a website, for instance, your website is going to have a unique look. It's going to have a unique color design. It's going to have a unique font. It's going to look you, as opposed to looking like Jane, the compost specialist. So you want to be something that stands out, but at the same time, it gives you some flexibility to work with. So that's where it starts. The marketing itself, there's several different forms of marketing. So I'll go over a few of them, and Marnie, if you want me to stop, you just let me know.
Okay, yeah, just go ahead.
Okay, so there's one called direct marketing. You heard me mention that earlier with the flyers that I hand-delivered because I was working on virtually no budget at all, but I had a physical ability to walk. So I put on, this is back in the day when there was Walkmans, I put on my Walkman and I walked from door to door and did my thing that way. That was my very first exposure to direct marketing. But there's other ways of doing this. Direct marketing, it basically means you're reaching to your ideal customer directly. You're not en masse advertising. You're directly marketing that individual. So that means you might purchase mailing lists that is a targeted genre of people in that mailing list and send advertising to them. You might already have your own contact list that you've been developing that you direct market to. You might have postal mail-outs that you're offering or phone calls campaigns. These are just some of the types of direct marketing. I don't want to spend too much time on this one because there's so many I want to cover here today. But that's basically what direct marketing means. Indirect marketing comes from several different subgenres, and it can actually sell more books over a longer period of time than direct marketing methods. There are times when direct marketing, as you heard me mention before, is very effective. So you have to sort of look at your own situation, but more often than not, indirect marketing does eventually sell more of your products or your books than the other. What it is it has a frugal aspect to indirect marketing. You're not paying for mailing lists. You're not paying postal fees, those kinds of things, but you're doing other things. One of those things is called underground marketing. So this might mean you're utilizing free or frugal classified ads either on or offline. You're using things like email signatures. You're using forum activity, blog activity, social media activity, things like that. Alley cat marketing, that's a form of underground marketing. And this is where you utilize things like community bulletin boards, leaving bookmarks on retail counters, those kinds of things. Soft selling is another term for edgy marketing, and it's also another term for earned media. Earned media is the new term out there for this very same thing. But basically it means you are creating articles, informative press releases, interesting content for a variety of media, both print and online media, that they're using as free filler content. So you're providing them a service. They love it because they don't have to go looking for content, quality content for their readers. It's easy, it makes their job easier, and it's free advertising to you. Typically, the article is not an announcement or an advertisement. You're going to get much more effective responses if it's an informative, educational piece, entertaining piece that you're submitting, and then you get your promotions out of the byline. So usually you'll see that in most magazines or newspapers, they have a byline about who wrote it and their website address. That's where you get your promotion out of it. So it's a soft selling, edgy marketing, or earned media is what that is called. Now there's also something called backdoor or back end. And this is an interesting technique that involves things like public appearances. you know, speaking to groups, doing interviews, readings, workshops, lectures, those kinds of things. And this can involve single events, or it might be, say, a series of events that you're putting on at a local university or college or public school. Maybe you're doing a special event for a festival that's happening or something like that. So it can be, it can really vary in this particular one, but basically it means doing public presentations. And what that is good for is for people who have the ability to learn or a natural ability to be in front of people and be comfortable, who have strong promotional skills and they have strong personal skills. So they're able to interact and connect with people very, very well en masse. So we're talking, you know, anywhere between 10 and several hundred people at a time. So you have to have a sort of a unique personality, a certain type of personality to be able to use that, but that's one end of doing it. So what happens is you do these events, people know you, the media does exposure about you, or you provide the material for the media to promote those events, and you get all kinds of different promotions, lots of different areas. The people that are coming to the show are going to be visiting your website to learn more about you. They're going to be picking up your promotional materials that you happen to have at the event. If you're selling a product at the event that you're speaking at, that would be there on the table. And it could be other catch keys or crotch keys that you're offering as well or selling that they're picking up and taking home with them. And, of course, everything points back to your website, which if you've done a good job, they're going to visit it. So it's an effective way of getting out there and becoming known without spending a lot of money. In fact, you can actually earn money quite often by doing these kinds of back-end things. People will pay lecturers and pay speakers to come in. Not always, but sometimes you can get that happening. Once you became known for doing that service, you can definitely have that as one of your extra services that you get paid for, helping out your budget. Anyway, there's also online marketing. You heard me sort of touch on that before. That's the website, the e-zines, the managing of a blog, the social networking, the online radio shows like what we're doing here today. That is where we're it's kind of like networking online as opposed to networking offline. There's also networking events that you can do in your own area, and that's more hands-on promotional activities. It's usually called hands-on. There's probably some other names for it out there, but basically you're meet and greeting, you're rubbing elbows, you're connecting with people. So you might go to a local business event, you might go to a meet and greet event, you might go to a festival that has a certain slant that you fit in really well. So you can go there and just talk to people and introduce yourself and hand out your bookmarks and business cards and get their business cards and do this sort of feedback and making connections with others within your specific genre. And that's another way of getting out there and doing that. So those are some of the basic ones that are involved in the marketing. They're, you know, but we could probably do a show on each and every one of those, but right. That's just a basic introduction as to what those terms mean.
Great. So just as a recap, we had direct marketing, indirect marketing, soft selling, back-end or backdoor marketing, online marketing, and then live network marketing. Are those the ones that you had?
That's right.
Did I miss one? Okay, very good. Excellent. Well, that is a great launching pad, and that's actually we're going to talk about. You kind of mentioned it in that. The platform that we have is actually the launching pad. And so when I think of platform, I think of it as at the front of a, you know, auditorium, you have a stage or a platform, and the person who is the presenter that day or the band or the choir or whatever it is, they get up on that platform and they get to hold the audience's attention for a period of time to present something that actually the audience was expecting. And that's really how I perceive platform being, is that's the opportunity that you really have at that moment then to share your information, the information that people came to you seeking. And what is it? How do you see platform?
You know, that's a very common way of seeing platform, and I have a slightly different view of it. You know how you go to those Olympic swimming events and you have these professional divers diving off of a diving board. Well, it's very similar to what you were saying. You have the people's attention, but you've made these steps. You've built this ladder up to the diving board. The diving board is now your platform, and you're going to dive off of it. You're launching off of that. So that's basically how I see it, but very similar to yours.
Yeah, and that's actually a nice distinction, too, that the relationship doesn't stop when you're on the platform. That's actually the beginning of the relationship, and then it goes on from there and builds over time or however you have it set up to be. Love that. Love that. Okay, well, let's go head on and talk about the necessary steps for a new business owner and author or speakers to master the stages of branding and marketing.
Well, I think the first thing that you have to decide is how you're going to be presenting your product, your service. So you need to find out what is so special, so unique about you, what is different about you. So let's say you're a pest control business, and there's four or five others in your region that service similar clienteles, and you have to stand out among them somehow. So you need to find out about what they're doing. So I call this the spy technique. It may, for some people, that has a negative connotation. I don't mean it in a negative way. Basically, you're investigating to seeing what your competition is doing and how you can be different. What you can be, how you can look different, how you can appear different, how you can improve upon what they're already doing, those kinds of things. So let's say, for instance, there's four different pest control places out there, but they show up in beat up old cars and nobody's wearing a uniform and there's nothing to identify who they are on the vehicle, and they show up at the place and they're using mostly chemicals, not too many organic things. So you can stand out in your services by choosing to go organic, strictly organic, strictly safe pesticide control or pest control, maybe catch and release programs that you might have for certain pests, that depending on your area. You might show up in a red uniform and your truck has red font on it. You know what I mean? So you would stand out by looking more professional, by going the extra mile, your presentation, what have you. And this doesn't matter whether it's a book or a business or a service. You need to stand out among other people that are there. So once you've decided that, then you can look at, okay, well, how do I get that message out there? How do I tell people that we're so different? So it would be in with your wording. You would have an ongoing marketing plan that you develop. So you would say, okay, well, this year we're going to do these activities as far as marketing goes, and we're going to choose from the thousands of other marketing opportunities that are out there for next year's marketing plan. But this year, we're going to focus on these things that fit within our budget for this year. And we're going to, in order to reach that goal, we're going to do a certain amount of things each month. So you break it down into a doable process. And you have a basic outline. It can be very flexible because sometimes things change or your budget changes or you find out that actually that's not going to work for you, so you try something else. So you're a little bit flexible in this regard, but you have a basic plan to follow that you are holding yourself accountable for completing. So if I say, okay, well, in April 2013, I'm going to contact every library in the Columbia Kootenai region. That's my goal for April. I'm not looking at what I'm going to do for the next 5 years right now and getting all overwhelmed. I'm looking at what I can do right now that's doable. So I think that's important as well, that we break it down into doable, a doable plan. And then every year you want to reevaluate that marketing plan. If you found that something you did last year had some fantastic results, you might want to go back to that eventually, maybe repeat it several times in the future. So you can watch and see what kind of campaigns worked, what kind of campaigns didn't work, and sort of a trial and error. It takes time to figure these kinds of things out. It really does. What worked for your competitor may not work for you. And I think that's a good thing. Some people find that scary because they'd rather find a perfect plan that they can just follow and not have to create themselves. But I think it's fantastic because that allows us to stand out among other people. So I think another thing that we need to look at is our campaign has a call to action. Every time we do something, it's going to have a call to action. Every ad that we put out, every article we put out, has a call to action. What is that call to action going to be? So is my article today going to be driving in an effort to drive traffic to my website, or am I trying to sell the Purple Snowflake marketing book, or am I trying to get people to utilize one of our writing services? So whatever it is that we're focusing on in that moment, that's what that campaign is going to be. The next campaign might be slightly different. We might be promoting maybe our plan is to get more names on our contact list so we can email more promotional things that way, direct marketing. We want to build that contact list. How are we going to do that? Well, we need to drive people, give them the incentive to sign up to that contact list. So when we're doing each campaign, we might have a slightly different focus as to what we want to get out of it. So I think that's another tip to keep in mind. I think it's also really important that any business, and if you're a writer of one single book, you're a business. So anybody that has a business should be looking at how they're going to market. I'm very passionate about this. I know, Marnie, you are as well. We can make a difference as a business owner in choosing how we market. So say, for instance, we can decide to focus on negative things and scare people into using our services. We can shock people with really shocking images. We can present this scarcity image out there that, oh, you better get it now or else. These kinds of things, which actually perpetuates negativity in society. Or we can go the other route. We can also do things like social marketing. We can look at green marketing, marketing how green and sustainable we are. We can get involved with local organizations. We can start volunteering. These are all wonderful social marketing and green marketing activities that will present the image that we're a sustainable, green, caring, community-minded company that other people are going to want to work with, and they're going to tell other people about us gladly, that viral marketing, underground viral marketing, because they're going to be impressed and want to work with us. So these are some of the things that we can keep in mind when we're developing the marketing plan, just to sort of, it's hard to generalize to everyone, but these are just some of the things that you might want to keep in mind when you're developing your marketing plan.
I love, we're going to go back through a little bit here. I love the first one was determine your uniqueness, and the acronym is USP, your unique selling proposition. What makes you different from other people? And I loved how you talked about that using your spy technique. And, of course, any time that we're going to start a new business that already has somebody out there doing something even similar to it, we have got to take the time to identify what differentiates us from the other people. Either that or else there's just so much business out there. So let's say a medical doctor moves into town because there's too much business for the first doctor. Well, at that point, the doctor can just be, you know, him or herself and let people, you know, call whatever, you know, just take referrals from the other company, the other doctor's office when they're overflowing and build a business that way. But usually we don't have that opportunity. Usually there is there's a business that's already there or a business that's similar, and we really need to take the time to find out what we're doing differently. And again, I think this goes right back to talking about the mission, vision, the business plan, what is going to make you different. And when you were using your spy technique, did you focus on all the aspects of it, or did you narrow it down to just looking at a few, like what services they offer or they don't offer, or what kind of things were you actually looking at specifically?
Well, I would do, I'm a research fanatic, so I probably research more than the average person would do. I just really like to learn, and I really like to understand every aspect of each individual action that I'm looking at that moment in time. So if, for instance, we're talking about building our website, I would go and I would look at people who have, within the same genre of focus, that I do. And then I would discern from what they're doing, how they're presenting themselves, the wording that they're using, and all of that kind of stuff. And I would try to decide, I would try to get into their mind and say, well, why are they doing this? What, you know, what makes them decide to use that color or that font, or why are they choosing those keywords and those kinds of things? And then I would try to change that to be something that I would want to do for myself. When I was writing the Purple Snowflake marketing book, for instance, I did this based on a marketing plan that I had been developing for about 13, 12 years, something like that, for myself. So every time I knew that I was going to have more than one book, so every time I learned something from one area or another, I would make a note of that in my own plan, in my ever-growing file folder, and that ended up evolving into what you see today in Purple Snowflake Marketing. So when I went to go actually put this into a book format and release it out to other people, I had already been, you know, through several different writing courses on a business aspect. I had already been through the management aspect of being a business owner, and I had delved into being a member of the media. So I had a different, you know, some very different aspects that I could put into this book to make it quite unique. But beyond that, I went and I did research on as many similar genre books as I could reasonably fit into my schedule. A lot of the very common ones that people would pick up are most recommended on forums and things like that. So I would pick up a copy or borrow a copy, and I would glean through it, and I would see how they organized the book, what I liked or didn't like about the book. So I had a little note pad that I would write down things. Oh, I really didn't like how they worded this. I didn't like the disorganization of this book. I really felt that this could be improved, right? So I took those kinds of notes and I applied it to my book. So my book was already written. It's already in a manuscript format, but now I'm tweaking it to stand out among all of the other books that are out there within a similar genre. That's another way of looking at doing spying.
I love that illustration of the book, because actually if you've written a book, if you're listening and you've written a book manuscript or you've already had a book published, you know that you're going to have to put in a book proposal if you're going to have someone actually edit and publish it for you. You'll have to put together a book proposal. And this very thing that Lillian's explaining is what you're going to have to do before they'll even look at it. You're going to have to tell them, what are the other books that are competing with my book? How does my book differ from these books? Why do I think people need my book in addition to having these books already on the market? And so that's just what you're going to have to do anyway. But the beauty of it is that if we can, now let's step back from the book thing, and let's say now you're going to start a retail store, or you're going to start a restaurant, or you're going to have an event, and other people, you know, they have things that they could do on that date at that time other than come to your event. What is it going to be about your event that's going to make them say, out of all the things that I could be doing on this Saturday night or whatever it is, I want to be with you? And we all have to do that all the time. That's just what marketing is. And it's so important to do the unique selling proposition. What is it about this that's going to attract you to come to it? And I think one of the other things that came out when you were giving us the list of things to do was that it's important to be yourself. How is it? Because everybody isn't going to come. Everybody isn't going to buy. No matter how wonderful it is, you're not going to be able to get every single person in the world there. So therefore, you have to identify who it is that you're shooting for. You know, what is your target market? And then what about you will make them want to come and spend time with you or give their money to you or what it is, whatever it is that you are asking them to do. I loved your talking about the annual marketing plan, and I think we want to spend the next few minutes talking about that, the difference between a business plan and a marketing plan. But I loved how you said to have an annual business plan to focus on this month, or, you know, sometimes you have to, depending on what business you're in, you have to, you know, focus 6 months out and only focus on that month, you know, and then focus on the seventh month after that, you know, so you're always out in advance, whatever it is that you have to do, but that it should be a plan. It should be flexible so that if something didn't work and you come back around to it, okay, you're going to do that every 3 months. But the first time it was a total dud and you thought, well, that was just a waste of money. I don't ever want to do that. Well, then when it comes around again, don't do it again. You know, you have the flexibility to change it out and do something else. But let's go with what's the difference between a business plan and a marketing plan? Just for somebody who's listening and they're like, I'm confused here. I'm not sure what the difference is. Lillian, did I lose you?
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can. So why don't you go ahead
okay.
and just share what the difference is between a business plan and a marketing plan.
Okay, you know, I would love to also follow up on what you said about the time and the money that people are going to be spending time with, you know, spending with you. And you raised a really good point, Marnie, I think should be emphasized, is that people have very limited amount of time. They're working with a limited budget. There are, you know, perhaps thousands of books out there that they would, you know, that would possibly appeal to them at that moment in their lives, yet they only have, you know, a certain limited amount of dollars. So how, what is it that's going to get them to spend their time or their money with you? I love that. So you really need to not only understand who they are, but you also have to understand, and this appeals to media, you know, approaching media as well,
right.
their potential objections. So if you were going up to someone and you say, okay, well, I want you guys to buy my honey, and you would have to say, okay, well, what possible objections might they have? And how can I counteract those objections right away in my proposal to them so that they don't have to say, oh, well, this is a negative point, and then you have to somehow combat that with something positive. And then they come up with another negative point of reasons why they can't or why they won't. And so if you approach those right away in your proposal, then they're much more likely to give you that chance, that moment of their time or to consider you in their budget, because you're more prepared, and most of their questions or perhaps negative perceptions have already been erased. So that is something that we need to look at as well. Now, when it comes to your business plan, okay, your business plan is your basic information on how you're going to be running your business. So you're going to be looking at things like your business concept, you know, knowing what you're selling, knowing the industry, defining your personal goals, developing the desired image that you want to have. You're going to define your graphics, your logo design, the look of your website, all of the things that we've talked about already, you know, your letterhead, how your business cards are going to look, all of those kinds of things. Then you're going to have the marketing aspect, and this is where you determine who your audience is, who your customer is, your client is, how much market share that particular unique clientele or customer is. You're going to be looking at competition that you might be facing. You're going to determine your promotions, your publicity, your advertising, those kinds of things. But you're also going to be looking at your operations. Your business plan is mainly going to be about your operations. So it'll start off by giving an overview of the things I just mentioned, and then it's going to go into heavy detail about your basic everyday-to-day options. So it's going to be looking at things like your city bylaws. You have to know those. Taxes, you're going to have to learn what kind of equipment that you might need and how you're going to obtain that equipment, whether you're going to buy the printer this year and the fax machine next year. That's not maybe a good example, but you see what I mean? You have to sort of work with your budget. You have to understand what kind of equipment you're going to need, where you're going to get that equipment, if you can rent it or lease it or share it with someone else who already has that kind of materials or equipment that you have. You're going to be looking at whether you're going to be outsourcing certain activities, such as getting your bookmarks printed somewhere, where you're going to get that done. Maybe your uniform is going to be designed in a specific way and you're going to outsource that. There's all different aspects when it comes to outsourcing, including getting your taxes done and other things. So whether you're going to do it yourself or whether you're going to outsource it, you're going to look at the organization of your office and your storage space. You're going to do things like whether you're going to install shelving and the file cabinets and all of that kind of stuff, your basic operations for your startup. But you're also going to be looking at things like having a fireproof safe box where you can keep your copyrights and your manuscripts and CDs and other backup, you know, computer backup and other important, you know, irreplaceable materials in there, a copy of your marketing and business plan and things like that, so that should anything happen to your home, from break-ins to, you know, floods or fire, that information is secure and stored. You'll also have your power attorney information in there, so that should something happen to you, who's going to run the business? Who's going to have the rights to your books? Who's going to be responsible for managing the business until you're back into the office? Or if you pass on, who inherits the business and who's going to have to take care of all of that? And do they have the information that they need? So that's all going to be in there as well. You're going to be looking at your finances. So you'll do a financial need analysis when you first start any business. It's often called FNA or financial needs analysis. But basically, if you're going through your personal monthly bills, including your groceries, anything that you need to survive. We're not talking extras like cable or beer or whatever, but just your basic things that is your survival level. And this shows you what you absolutely have to earn in order to pay your bills and put food on the table. And that's really important that you know that, so that you don't overextend your budget when you're running your business, when it starts up, when it launches. So your business plan is going to cover all of that kind of thing. It's also going to talk about, well, you need your financial needs analysis, by the way, to figure out your break-even analysis. And that's basically telling you how you're going to cover the cost of running the business and paying for your personal life as well. You're going to want to have all of your taxes set up, so you'll be visiting your tax accountant to figure out what's the best record-keeping situation for your unique business or service or product, how they want your books to be put together to make it easier, user-friendly for them, so that they're going to be spending less time in the end over the years, saving you money. They're also going to give you examples of things that maybe you didn't realize that you could write off. So they're going to tell you, well, make sure you keep your receipts on this, this, and this, and it may not even cross your mind. So it's really worth taking the time to go visit your accountant and getting that set up. You'll also want to have information for them, like if you have fixed assets or capital equipment, like you already have the furniture or big ticket items like your computer, your printer, or anything else that you're supplying the business personally. Those are your fixed assets, and so you'll be able to claim the depreciation of those machines on your taxes in most situations. So these are all things that your accountant's going to help you through, but these are some of the examples of why you need to go to the accountant, and that's what's going to be involved in your business plan. So it's basically your day-to-day operations of the business and how it's going to be operated, whether you're going to outsource different things. That's really where the business plan, what it involves.
Well, thank you, and I'm so glad. The reason that I included that in this branding and marketing training is like, why do you even have it in here? But a lot of new entrepreneurs, they just run out to directly to the marketing point before they get this business plan really nailed down. And where you get in trouble with this, in fact, we were just with somebody a couple days ago who's had a business for 5 years and just got a notification that he was supposed to be charging taxes on his service. So he doesn't have a product that he sells a service, but in his state, he has to pay taxes, sales tax on that service, and he hasn't been collecting it. He doesn't have it. He's in a mess now. So it's very important that you get this business plan part done first. Another really, really common mistake that new entrepreneurs make is not charging enough. So you charge enough for maybe you pay for your supplies for something, but you didn't pay anything for your time. And what happens then is that you can't grow, because as long as you can do it, you're fine with that, getting only paid, you know, pennies on the hour or whatever. But as soon as you have to hire somebody in, all of a sudden you realize, oh, you know what, I didn't charge enough for this in order to pay them. So you want to be thinking, kind of step back a little bit before you start marketing, before you tell people how much you're going to charge, whatever like that. But you want to step back and make this business plan so that you can be successful not just this week but also in the future. Lillian, we just have about 5 minutes left, and I wanted you to just share with us, from your perspective, some of the hottest marketing strategies for 2013.
I think the one that is really hip right now is earned media, and that's basically, as I was saying before, writing content, free promotional articles, free content that other publications can pick up and use. So you can utilize press release and article distribution services online. You can send that information directly to contacts you've built relationships with over the years that have blogs or e-zines or newsletters or mailing lists that they constantly send information to. These are all great resources. Another reason to keep really good records of all of the contacts that you've had over the years and how you might be able to network with them in the future. But earned media is basically you're not paying for the exposure, but you're putting in the labor. You do have to put in the time and the labor hours in creating that content. And it should be fairly unique. There are some organizations and outlets out there who will accept previously published materials, but you really need to let them know that this has been published before. Even though you're offering it for free, a lot of places really like to have more of a unique content. So what you can do is you can retweak an article so that it reads as a unique article. So you take an article that you've already written and you flesh out some things, you put some new fresh content in there, a different introduction, a different closing, and voila, you got a new article that you can then get someone else to publish. So there are ways of getting around that, but creating that earned media is probably the biggest, most effective way of getting known as an expert and driving traffic to your website.
Now, Lillian, if somebody is not familiar with how to do that, do you help people do that?
No, I'm not a publicist for other people, but it's so easy to do. Basically, if you go online, well, we list how to do it in the Purple Snowflake Marketing book, but basically, if you go online and you look up sites like a press release distribution, article release distribution, article-dashboard.com, ezinearticles.com are a couple of them that I use quite frequently, but there are dozens and dozens of them out there that you might want to try out and see what kind of results you get from them. And you can just post.
Yep, and from my perspective, what's worked for me too, and this is it really is a great way to get in a lot of papers, depending on what you write and how it's distributed. But the key is to provide, like what you said, don't make it salesy, don't make it about your specific thing. Make it newsworthy. Like, you can imagine reading an article in a magazine or reading an article in your newspaper. They're not trying to sell you anything. They're just training you or teaching you or expanding your horizon about some particular aspect of life and how it affects you, how you can do it better. And then at the end, in the byline, is all you get. So don't if you make it too salesy, they can't pick it up. They won't
Absolutely.
Republish it. Yeah.
That's right.
Great.
And you want to keep it fairly small, too. You know, your word count should be around 250 to 350 words.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to go over 350 unless you've clarified with that specific contact that you're working with and they say, oh, well, actually, we publish articles all the way up to 700 word or whatever. Then you can go a little bigger, of course, to reach their maximum word count. But most publications, especially newspapers and online publications, they're going to want to have smaller articles, something that's a brief introduction to a topic. And then that's actually good for you because you're not able to give all of the information in such a small article. It's going to entice people to check out your website even more so because they've just, they had that teaser and now they want to know the rest.
Absolutely. And the critical factor there is that you write about something that you specialize in, not about something random off the wall and hope people come over to you. You have to write about what you're specializing in. Oh, Lillian, this hour has just flown by. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Pleasure. Anytime, Marnie.
Great. Okay, and everybody, you can learn more about Lillian and about the Brummett Media Group, or the books that were mentioned today are Trash Talk and Purple Snowflake Marketing Plan. The Purple Snowflake Marketing Plan. You can get more information about that over at Brummett Media Group, and the address on the line is brummett.ca for Canada, .ca, brummett.ca, and we'll catch you next time. Have a great week. Thanks for being here. Have a lovely day. Bye-bye.